This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Welcome back onto this edition of the Kona Edge. I'm Brad Brown, and today I get to share another fantastic story. I touch base, and this is quite an interesting one because we've spoken to his spouse quite a while ago, actually, and I'm guessing it's probably close on 2 years ago here on the podcast. Another one of those iron couples, so to speak, both qualifying and racing on the Big Island. And I'm talking about Justin Herrick. I think you're going to thoroughly enjoy his story today. That's what we get into. Before I touch base with Justin, though, don't forget, if you are looking for some assistance and some guidance on your triathlon journey, make sure you check out the training platform that we've put together. Myself and my business partner, who is a phenomenal coach, you would have heard him a few episodes back here on the podcast. He was Triathlon South Africa's high performance coach for many, many years. He's been to two Olympic Games, two Commonwealth Games as part of Team South Africa. And we've got you covered pretty much from beginner sprint triathlon programs right through to advanced Ironman. So go check it out, thekonaedge.com/coaching. And if you use the coupon code KONA at checkout, you'll get yourself a pretty decent discount. So go check it out. That's thekonaedge.com/coaching. We'd love to have you there. That's where I'm hanging out online. That's where I'm doing my training. We've got a phenomenal community of athletes growing there. So go check it out. That's thekonaedge.com/coaching. To the Kona Edge now as we head to Michigan to catch up with our next guest, Justin Herrick. Justin, welcome onto the podcast.
Well, thank you, Brad. It's an honor, and I'm humbled to be on the show after listening to, you know, many episodes and actually hearing friends as well on the show. I'm excited to be here.
It's so funny because I mean, I do this thing. I'm stuck on the other side of the world to most people. And it's so weird when I reach out to somebody and they say, yeah, we know exactly who the podcast is. It's flattering to me as much as you saying you humbled. I'm always amazed that people on the other side of the earth listen to what I do in my little office in Cape Town, which is amazing.
Yeah. Well, I think triathlon's such a small niche when you are scanning different podcasts and see Kona or triathlon, you know, you automatically dive right into it. And it's fun hearing stories, not from just the professionals, but normal age groupers and how they make things work.
Absolutely. Justin, you're a normal age grouper, and I put the normal in air quotes because you're pretty decent in your own right. Where did your triathlon journey start? How did you get into the sport?
Well, actually, not as traditional as many others on your show, but I actually got into triathlon. My dad was a longtime triathlete for years. Our vacations revolved around going to his races and watching him race. And when you're 10, 11 years old, you don't really know what's going on. You just get to go to the playground with your brothers and have fun. The football and the basketball sports in high school, and then eventually played college football for a year until getting injured, unfortunately, after my first season. And it's from there that after having surgery on my knee, it didn't really heal as well as I thought it would. So I didn't play football the next year. And from there, I kind of just decided to run a marathon with my dad and see how it would go. And kind of the rest is history, moving on up the distance from marathoning to short distance triathlons to Ironman.
Just to me, that's incredible. I mean, coming off a knee injury, most people won't think, oh, I've hurt my knee, I'm going to go run a marathon. That's not normal thinking. And most people wouldn't think run a marathon because for normal people, marathons are just like way out there. For Ironman triathletes, it's like, it's a marathon, so what? But I mean, that's, what was it just, do you think it was growing up in a household where it was almost normal that you thought, you know, can't play football anymore, let's go run a marathon?
Yeah. I think the endurance kind of side of sport was the new or not the new normal, but it was the normal in my household. And not saying that every day was having my dad go out for long workouts. It wasn't necessarily like that, but I think just the sports side of life was kind of normal in our household. And whether it was endurance sports, or my brothers wrestled and played football in college as well. So I think it was just more of a sporting background that, you know, opened us up to different things that we could do to find enjoyment.
And growing up in a family of with brothers, I know personally as well, I've got an older brother. That's where the competitive spirit comes from for me, and I'm sure it's the same as you. If you wanted to eat in the household, you had to fight your way into the kitchen and into the refrigerator.
Exactly. Now, of all the four boys, I'm the smallest. I maybe wasn't fast enough when I was younger, but you know, I quickly quickly found my speed and eventually endurance too, that now it worked out in my favor.
You said your dad is a triathlete. Any of your other siblings in the sport, or is it just you?
You know, the endurance sports kind of rubbed off on my other brothers, who I've had my second oldest brother was a longtime football player in college, and you know, wrestled even in high school at the 275 weight, and after having a couple of kids, he's kind of jumped on the more marathoning, and it has been his major goal to qualify for Boston. He did that, and then now he's in the ultras, training for a 100-mile trail race. So it's kind of fun to see, you know, these different backgrounds of all of my brothers, and you know, my dad and I like to say rubbed it off on them a little bit to find their new limits.
I love it, and I always say to people who have kids who are doing triathlon now that you are whether you like it or not, condemning your kids to a life of endurance sport, because I've said it on the podcast before, I grew up in a household with a dad who did ultra marathons. My brother's an ultra marathoner, he's an Ironman, so am I. I think my kids are going to be doing the same. I mean, it's just one of those things. If, like you say, if it's happening in the house, it's normal. It's just the way it is. So, you know, there could be worse things. You could be condemning your kid to a life of sitting on a sofa watching TV and Netflix. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. And that was one thing I appreciated about my parents is they never pushed running or triathlon on me. They let us kind of find what sport we were interested in and support us 100%. And I think my dad was secretly excited when I kind of pushed towards that running and triathlon with him. So it became something that kind of we did together and is built from there.
What was your dad into, the longer stuff as well, or from a triathlon point of view, what sort of distances was he into?
You know, he was, this was in the early days where there weren't a lot of Ironmans and even the half Ironmans, it was more just local races. So he concentrated on a lot of the short course events, and he did do a few local half Ironmans, but he's never at that point did an Ironman. And that was his ultimate goal, was to go to Hawaii and race Kona. I remember back in middle school, we actually went to Hawaii on vacation just so he could go and run on a Lee Drive and kind of train on the course and have fun. And at the time, we were just thinking, oh, okay, let's go to Hawaii for a vacation. Never made that connection, and I didn't even know anything about triathlon at the time. But it wasn't until I decided to do an Ironman when I was in college that at that point he hadn't done an Ironman, and he was always, I think, a little reserved in thinking he could do it or not. And so we both signed up for our first Ironman together and didn't necessarily train together, but we kind of pushed each other to get out the door and get the training in so that we could have a good first time.
Man, how cool is that? I mean, that's a story not too many people. I get goose flesh just thinking about it. That's amazing. Getting through an Ironman with your dad, I mean, that's really special.
Yeah. And again, we didn't know anything about training, and even he, having done triathlons for years, didn't really understand kind of the training side of it. And we just thought, we'll just ride long, run long, swim long, and we'll make it to the finish. So that was kind of how the first Ironman went.
I love it. And obviously playing a bit of college football, like I said, the competitive nature's there. When did you decide, you know what, this triathlon thing's pretty cool, I want to give it a bash to see how good I can actually be at it?
Yeah, it was probably the year before I decided on Ironman. I remember doing a half Ironman and was kind of surprised. I just wanted to break 5 hours, and I was just under that. I'm like, wow, you know, I'm fast, when in reality you see times now and it's like, I was not fast. But I think that drive to push for different times and to see how far I could push my body in a different way versus how I was pushing myself in football was a way to kind of challenge myself. And I think growing up, even from that younger age, whether I knew it or not, I have been instilled with this passion to see how far I can push the body and push the limits.
And that doesn't end, though, does it, Justin? I mean, it's as you get old, and we all know and that's probably one of the reasons why Kona is so popular and Ironman racing in particular, is just because the way they've set it up with the age groups, and every 5 years you're in a new one, a new age group up, and you're slightly faster than the older guys in that age group, and it just keeps you coming back for more.
Yeah, absolutely. And whether it's, yeah, just the times or even the courses, setting off a different course where there's different elements that you have to train for, and whether you're concentrating on time, sometimes it's concentrating on the climate or what the course is like. So that adds in a little more challenge to how you prep and what your expectations are at the finish.
So when did Kona get onto the radar for you? When did you start thinking, you know what, I want to get there?
Yeah. Yep. Well, I knew Kona existed when I was training for that first Ironman. I remember sitting in my dorm room in college, getting ready for my workouts. I would get on YouTube and watch some of those motivational videos and get myself pumped up for the workouts. And so that was always kind of the goal from Ironman one. And, you know, I learned a lot from that first Ironman. Obviously I didn't know how to train and I didn't know about coaches or anything like that. So it was after that first Ironman where I decided I want to be a coach. I want to learn how to train myself. And at the time it was more a financial thing where I didn't want to have to pay a coach. I was in college, you know, paying for school. So I went and got certified through our USA Triathlon organization as a coach back in 2010. And it was that knowledge that I took into my second Ironman in Ironman Louisville, where things kind of just made sense. Why do you train at certain intensities or lengths? And there's recovery days apparently and good training plans, which I wasn't necessarily using at the time. And so finding that combination and how to schedule things appropriately kind of made a huge improvement on my second Ironman, where my dad again raced with me for his second Ironman and I ended up qualifying that race. And that was kind of special. Getting to the finish line, I knew I got the spot I needed to get my Kona spot. And I remember obviously waiting a long time for my dad to come finish, but I remember running out to that last mile to finish his race with him and telling him that he was going to be going to Hawaii in 6 weeks based on my finish. So that was kind of a special moment that we had.
That's amazing. Justin, and then as far as that transition from that first one to the second one where you decided, you know what, I'm going to coach myself, and you joke about rest days and the recovery and the importance thereof, were there major changes you made or was it just minor tweaks that you had to sort of put in place?
Yeah, I would say the biggest change was the intensity. Thinking Ironman, I was just doing the distance, going out and doing those zone twos, or you know, the what I call the age grouper zone three, where everyone goes at that, you know, middle intensity. And that's all you do. You don't go above threshold or you don't incorporate, you know, those easy days where you're in that zone one or two. So I think varying my intensities was probably the biggest change that I made instead of just going out and getting the distance in. I found that I was training less, but harder. And that in a sense made me faster.
Brilliant. And as far as the coaching thing, I mean, I'm taking it you still coaching. Is that a big part of what you do today?
Yeah, I do. Yep. Right now, I still work for a company back in Iowa where I'm originally from, called Zoom Performance, and it's more of an endurance. So we focus on triathletes, cyclists, mountain bikers, and runners. And I think that also keeps me accountable for my own training, making sure that not only am I writing, you know, personal workouts for these athletes who want to perform the best they can, it really makes me think about my training and what can I adjust after each race to continue to improve. I felt like I've gotten my own formula that I can use to get, you know, what I try to do getting to Kona each year. But sometimes trying to make those changes to get those little extra improvements, you know, sometimes it can work and sometimes it doesn't. And I found that out at least this year where I tried to change a lot of things with my training just to see if I could get that extra edge on in my performance. And sometimes it doesn't work and that's okay. You kind of go back to the drawing board and figure out a new plan.
That's quite an important point you make there, Justin, because I often ask people like, do you think you've got this thing worked out or is it a work in progress? And obviously when you do your first Ironman to your second one, the improvements are pretty big, but once you've been around the block a few times, those improvements are pretty small and the increments aren't as big as they used to be. How do you keep yourself motivated when you're not getting such big gains on those performances? I mean, what is it that keeps you coming back to keep doing the hard work?
Yeah. I think trying to find different approaches to my training kind of keeps me into it. I know there's not one way to get a good performance. And sometimes when you do get stuck in a plateau or what I was kind of at, where I knew the formula to get those 9.10s and 9.20s, which in most of the difficult course that I race, it works well to get your Kona spot. But wanting to get close to that 9 hour mark or going under, obviously I have to make some changes to get that extra performance. And that's where I kind of like to experiment and try new things to spice up my training and hopefully improve my performance. But sometimes, yeah, like I mentioned, it doesn't always work out, but that's something you learn from and you go back to the drawing board. And that's always a hard question. Do I keep doing what I'm doing when it's kind of a mediocre performance, but I know I'll be at this certain time just based on past races? Or do I go out there trying something new and see what happens? So that's kind of the allure for me, is what can I change to try to get that performance? And if it doesn't work, then what else can I do to continue training?
So what's the key to qualifying for Kona? We have lots of people listen to this podcast who getting into the sport and aspire to racing on the Big Island. You've been a few times. You know what it takes. What is the secret?
Oh, I think a lot of people try to concentrate on a specific workout, or they might look at what are the pros doing, and sometimes different magazines will post, well, these are the pros' favorite workouts, and they automatically think that's what I need to do to get that extra edge. But there's no secret sauce to a good Ironman performance, just consistency, I think, over the years. When I think back, I was trying to think of what I was going to say on the podcast today, and I thought, I've been in this sport about 10 years. You know, that's a long, not a long time, but for someone that, you know, continually, I would think, has okay performances. Obviously, those years beforehand and continuing those years of training is the consistency sometimes that's needed to perform well. But then you get some of those great athletes who come in their first Ironman and they crush it, you know? So I think for a lot of the time, it's consistency. And that's especially the story for me. I'm not, you know, an extremely gifted athlete. I think just the hard work kind of pushes my way along. But yeah, it's just consistency over the years.
Show up day after day and just turn those boxes green, essentially. Make sure you do what you need to do and the rest will take care of itself. Justin, as far as sort of staying motivated in the sport, I mean, 10 years, you mentioned the guys who come in with a bang. We see it often. I mentioned it on the podcast quite a bit where guys come into the sport and they're around for a season or two and you never see them again. To be around the sport for 10 years, what keeps you going?
I think taking breaks, for sure. I see a lot of athletes chasing that Kona spot, and if they don't get it that first round, they automatically sign up and have another Ironman maybe 3 or up to 6 months later to try to get that spot. And sometimes you're pushing 3 Ironmans in a year, and that's too much in the body. You need to take a break and refresh. And this time around in July, I raced Ironman Whistler. It didn't go very well. I could have easily signed up for another race, you know, a month or two later and use that fitness later on. But I knew in the long term of my drive in the sport and my health of my body, that wasn't going to work out well. And so you kind of just take the loss. So you refocus, take a good break, both physically and mentally, and then you get back on the horse. But I see a lot of athletes kind of push race after race. And especially if you're in that sport for a short amount of time, like you see in some of those that don't come back, you kind of see that trend of racing almost too much, at least long distance Ironmans to allow for that improvement.
For you personally, what do you think is the optimum amount of Ironmans in a year for you personally?
Well, for me personally, I try to stick to, I've been getting the trend where I have the qualifying race and then Kona. So 2 has always been kind of the limit for me. But then the next year I usually would take off. So my first Kona in 2010, I didn't race Kona until 2012 was the next one, because I took that year off. Then I raced my qualifier and then got back kind of the same year, 2015 and then 2017. So I kind of go in spurts. I think my body needs the next year to focus on some of that speed. So I go back down to the 70.3 to give my body a break and my mind a break as well, but also to bring in a lot of that speed where it does come in handy in Ironman distance.
You talk about taking a break. Are you taking a break totally? Or is it a case of, you know, we're just not going to race, we're still going to train and tick over? Or do you take a specific time off where you're not doing anything and you're hanging out on the dark side?
Oh, well, for sure, after an Ironman, I'll take at least 2 weeks and do nothing. That's my favorite time, just to relax and not have any stress. And then probably a couple weeks of just going out and finding something that I enjoy, whether that's mountain biking or running with a dog. And maybe group workouts. A lot of the times we shelter ourselves in our individual training where we don't get to go in those groups. And so just finding something that I enjoy, nothing structured, just getting out. If I don't feel like it, I won't. But if I feel like I need to work off the beers from the night before, then I'll go out and find a group to work out with. But yeah, for sure that month after is, you know, really low key. And then I'll build back up and then concentrate on just the short distance for that season.
As far as dealing with disappointment, I mean, you mentioned this year hasn't gone quite according to plan. How do you deal with disappointment? Does it fire you up? Do you get down on yourself? What's the trip?
Yeah, I think I needed one bad race to get me fired up. I haven't had a real horrible Ironman in a long time, and I've been lucky to have pretty good performances leading up to this point. But I think having a bad performance not only motivates me, but it also makes me respect the distance a little more than I have been, I guess. Where you have, you know, in the past years, I've gotten that formula. I know what works. And now getting the wrench thrown into the works here, I have to refocus and adjust. And I'm hungry now to go back and race again and show that, yeah, I can do this again. Because sometimes it does scare you a little bit now. And I didn't have that fear necessarily as I had in the past, you know, respect for the distance and the fear almost of, am I going to finish or not?
Yeah. We often, and I think it's all sports, you end up learning more when things don't go right than when they do go right. What are some of the lessons that you've learned this season and what are you doing to sort of fix them?
Yeah, I thought I've had my nutrition dialed in for the last few Ironmans and it seems to work, but again, different races and different climates, you need a different plan. In Whistler back in July, it was really hot and uncommonly hot for that area. And I lost a nutrition or my hydration system on the front. So I had one bottle and I typically just do gels throughout the whole day. But when I have two bottles, I usually have one Gatorade and one with water, but I kept just filling the water. And obviously not having the second bottle for Gatorade, I definitely was depleted in my electrolytes and made the run very, very difficult. So adjusting not only, you know, nutrition, but how you're going to prep for the race as well, knowing what's the backup plan. Because I've been so solid with my plan that I've used for years. And when something goes wrong, you need to have an adjustment and troubleshoot almost on the way.
Mm. Let's talk about Kona as an event and as a place. What in your mind makes it so special?
Oh, you get the fittest athletes in the whole world in one town. Can definitely relate with you mentally, especially the week leading up. Whenever I've gone there, I try to go the latest as possible. I just don't like the anxiety that it brings, not only to myself, but those around me. You kind of feel that tension throughout the week. It's excitement, but it's also a lot of nerves and that can play with you mentally as well. And I know for me personally, I try to, at least when I'm there, get my training in and then get away. We try to stay outside of town just so we're not around, you know, the nerves. But I think that also makes it a special place where you have that many fit athletes, that much nerves and excitement around one event where you have to get it right on one day. And, you know, that's kind of the celebration of the hard work. You've done the work to qualify, you've gotten there, and now it's time to celebrate. So that helps out at least a little bit with the nerves.
One of the things that crops up time and time again is just how different that race is to any other Ironman on the calendar for various reasons. Obviously, the competition's just a different level, but from a climate and conditions perspective, it's very different. How do you prepare yourself for a race like Kona?
Yeah, a lot going into heat training. Obviously, you've probably heard that quite a bit with the people that you've interviewed, but yeah, finding ways to acclimate to the weather, but also it's the mental game too. And so knowing that you're going to have to suffer and having that mindset going in is kind of a big key to being successful there. So you can do the training, you can acclimate and do heat training and wear bundles or run in a sauna, however people want to do that. But it's that mentality of knowing that you're going to hurt from the gun that you need to come in with. Otherwise, it's going to be a long day.
Do you go into, I mean, obviously going into races to qualify, you've got sort of expectations of what you're chasing. On the Big Island, do you go into the race with expectations, or is it a case of all bets are off, you're going to go as hard as you can? If it comes off, it comes off. If it's good enough on the day, it's good enough on the day. If it doesn't, it's not.
Yeah, yeah. Unlike other races, I don't necessarily have a straight out goal. I want to execute the best race I can and stay within my limits. I know the bike's always been my struggle in triathlon, and I know that that's where I can gain the most time if I keep my composure, especially that last 40K on the bike where it's just headwind constantly and miserably hot, and just staying within my limits. I think people, when they go into Kona, they think they can push 30 watts higher than they've ever done on the bike and miraculously bike 20 minutes faster. That doesn't work. and so it's not a magical day. It's not like you're going to have, you know, these above human expectations and achieve those. It's staying within your limits and, you know, executing just a really good training day. So really trying to set up yourself for, ultimately, I think it comes down to the run. You got to set yourself up for the run, because you'll see these bikers just blast by in the first 56 miles, and then you see them walking on the run for sure.
As far as your achievements over the 10 years that you've been in the sport, what are you most proud of?
I think my ability to adapt to kind of adversity. It was 2015. I was able to qualify the year before in Ironman Wisconsin with my wife. That was her first Ironman. I coached her through it, and we both qualified. So that was a kind of a special race for 2015 in Kona. Qualified a year ahead of time, so we had that whole year to concentrate just in that one race. And then all of a sudden, God throws you a curveball, and it was about 8 weeks out. I was hit by a car and broke my collarbone, and had to totally change up my training completely, from sitting on, you know, the couch for a couple weeks, and then trying to figure out, well, how am I going to bike on a trainer? When am I going to be able to run again? Swimming for 8 weeks didn't happen. So going into that race, being able to adapt to a new scenario that I've never been in, I think really, really didn't excite me, obviously, but it gave me a new challenge other than just doing the normal training that I've always done. So finding a new challenge to see what I could do leading up to the race to set myself up still for a good Ironman 8 weeks after, you know, breaking my collarbone. And actually that was my best performance in Kona since.
That's incredible. I mean, what do you think? I mean, what do you attribute that to? I mean, obviously there was a lot going on, but I mean, it's pretty difficult to replicate everything that went into that. But what do you think was the reason that you had the best day out?
You know, I think having 8 weeks of kind of rest really did it. A lot of people, that last block of training, kind of overdo it. Your body's already been through a lot within your last, you know, however many months of training, that I think 8 weeks, maybe my body was just almost overtrained and it needed a little break. Unfortunately, you know, breaking your collarbone is not the best way to get that recovery, but I think coming in fresh was big. And then maybe it helped my pain tolerance, dealing with, you know, the constant pain of the shoulder as I was coming back, but maybe that helped me adjust to the heat or the pain throughout the race. I don't know.
Justin, what do you think is the biggest challenge the sport as a whole is facing today?
Oh, when it comes to Kona or qualifying, I think a lot of the times it's marshaling the course. Sometimes athletes, you know, maybe throw their integrity at the door and they aren't riding maybe legally and they know it. And we saw that kind of in Texas this year, where it was so rampant that Ironman just kind of threw up their hands. And that was kind of a sad day to see in sport, that, you know, sometimes you get sucked into those pockets, but so many athletes being okay with, you know, riding illegally, it's kind of frustrating. And it makes you wonder, those athletes who are in front of you, is it legal? You want to think that people are racing with integrity and racing for themselves. But yeah, it always makes you wonder, and it's a little sad.
Yeah, absolutely. As far as your career in the years to come? I mean, how long do you still see yourself doing Ironmans? Are you going to be one of those guys in your 80s chasing the Kona dream still?
Oh, if I'm able to move, I think. I don't know if I'm in my 80s, but yeah, you know, we don't have kids right now, and that's a lot of time that we can put towards our training. And so, I don't know, when a child comes into the mix, that kind of obviously changes a lot of things. And I have a lot of respect for those who have families that work their training around their family life and their work. And that's, you know, a big commitment and takes a lot of, good time execution and allotting for, you know, putting in the training, but also putting in time with your family and your work. So I don't know, until we get to that point, I want to say I'd keep on racing at the Ironman level, but who knows when that first baby comes in.
Yeah, absolutely. You can always make a comeback when you're 80. So, and some of those 80-year-olds are really fast. So,
yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. You would think times are getting slower, but no, definitely not.
Absolutely. Well, Justin, it's been great catching up. I look forward to talking about the individual disciplines, but we'll save that for next time out. Thanks for your time on the Kona Edge today.
All right. Thank you, Brad.
And that's it for another story here on the podcast. Thank you very much to Justin Herrick for joining me. We'll touch base with Justin a week from today, actually 8 days from today, to find out a little bit more about his Ironman swim. Before I go, though, I mentioned at the top of the show, if you're looking for some help and guidance on your triathlon journey, if you're just starting out or if you have been around the sport for a while, make sure you check out our online training platform and online community that we've built over at thekonaedge.com/coaching. You can get all the guidance and help you need at a phenomenal, phenomenal price. And if you use the coupon code KONA at checkout, we'll give you a massive discount. So go check it out. That's thekonaedge.com/coaching.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for The Kona Edge.